Tech Talk with Jess Kelly. This is News Talk.
Hello and welcome to Tech Talk. Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up this week, Emmett Ryan joins me to discuss what's next for Amazon now that the CEO has stepped down. Derek Riley will have the very latest on the e-scooter legislation. Plus, we'll hear from the Tyndall Institute about a massive investment happening here in Dublin. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com or you'll find me on Twitter @JessKellyNT. It's been another busy week in the world of technology. Earlier this week, I was chatting to Kieran Cudahy on The Hard Shoulder about some of the headaches that Irish consumers are facing in the wake of Brexit when it comes to online shopping. This is something that we've spoken quite a lot about over the last few years since kind of Brexit became a thing. But when it came into effect on January 1st, a lot of sort of complications came into play. So whether that is import fees, whether that is extra delivery charges, extra delivery delays, there's quite a bit to it. So we spoke about this during the week and I mentioned a website that has an excellent explainer. If you are considering buying from the UK, the website is citizensinformation.ie and then they have a guide called Buying Online from the UK After Brexit. I have this saved. I have it bookmarked on my laptop and then I can just tap into it whenever I am contemplating buying anything online. So that is worth checking out. Also, you can listen back to that podcast up on newstalk.com. Also on newstalk.com is my review of the Apple iPad Air. This is a device that I bought myself last weekend just as a treat because, you know, YOLO, etc., etc., etc. And I absolutely love it. I looked at all the different iPad models over the last number of weeks. I was considering, you know, should I just go for the basic model, which is less than €400, which is, again, a very good price for an Apple product. But when I was looking at the spec sheets sort of side by side, what you're getting for an extra €200 on the Apple iPad Air is a hell of a lot. So you're getting the better chip, you're getting a bigger screen, you're getting a better screen, and it is powerful enough for me to do all of my work on it. So I spent most of this week just working off the iPad rather than my work laptop, which is a Microsoft Surface, and it was fantastic. It did pretty much everything I wanted it to do. I have it paired to my Logitech K380 keyboard, which I use for everything, and then my Surface mouse, which again I use for everything. The beauty of those Bluetooth devices is that they pair to anything. So whether I am using an Apple product or a Windows product, it'll just talk to them. I would highly, highly, highly recommend the Apple iPad Air. I was a bit skeptical when it first arrived. I was like, oh God, I really hope I use it now. But I have used it. The note-taking capabilities are just fantastic. I bought the Apple Pencil to go with it. So I've been using an app called GoodNotes instead of my paper diary. And I've been using it for my lists every day and it's fantastic. The one tip I would give, aside from getting the iPad Air and the Apple Pencil, is get a paper-like screen cover. Because when you're writing on the screen, it's lovely and the pen is so responsive and all the rest. But if you are someone like me who likes drawing and doodling and all the rest, putting the paper-like cover screen, it's like a matte screen protector over, just adds a little bit of resistance and makes it more feel more real as though you are writing in a notebook. So I would highly recommend it. And for those kind of shouting at their phone or their radio, wherever you're listening to this, saying, just write in a notebook, the reason I wanted it for note-taking was to do the handwriting to text conversion because I have so many different notebooks and they're not searchable, obviously. Whereas when you use something like GoodNotes or OneNote, you can then search the handwritten text or even the text and then find what you're looking for. So that's my reasoning. That's how I justified buying myself an iPad. But I really like it. Again, you can hear that full review up on newstalk.com or just search for Technology on the Pat Kenny Show wherever you get your podcasts and you will find it there. But we're going to start this week's Tech Talk with one of the biggest tech stories from the week, and that was that Jeff Bezos stepped down as CEO of Amazon. Joining me once again to talk about this is Emmett Ryan, the technology editor at the Business Post. Emmett, thanks a million for joining me once again.
Great to be with you here, Jess.
So were you one of the ones that was surprised by this move by Bezos to step down?
Definitely, definitely at the time. As in, I know it's only been a couple of days, but at the time it was like, what? Where? Why? And, you know, it was like late enough in the evening, Irish time, when it happened. So it was a case of that right before bed was like, oh, my week just got busier, was the personal reaction. But when it settled down, it was a case of, well, when you think about it, the timing makes a lot of sense. Amazon has just had record profits. His personal arch nemesis, Donald Trump, has left the White House. So, you know, he's leaving after that problem has been resolved, so to speak, even though he wasn't very active in the defeat, etc. And, you know, obviously it's a time when companies like Amazon are coming under pressure for assorted reasons, be it their impact on the environment, working conditions, but also the sheer money they're making and the, you know, ethics and morals around that. So he's leaving when they look great, you know, in terms of their profit and loss balance sheet. And he's leaving at a time when it means he can avoid all the hassle that comes with having a great balance sheet.
Yeah, it's funny. I was thinking about it over the last few days, and although everybody knows what he looks like now and everybody knows his name now, that to me is sort of a recent part of the story, because he wasn't as visible and as prolific as the likes of Zuckerberg, despite the fact that he's one of the richest people in the entire world. What do we know about him, the man? Like, what is his sort of business background and story, and when did he come to prominence?
Well, yeah, I think you're spot on in terms of sort of the way the image of him developed, because, you know, you mentioned Zuckerberg. With Facebook, reasonably early on, most people could tell you what Mark Zuckerberg looked like. With Bezos, Amazon, the brand image, so to speak, was originally, it's a place you buy books. Okay, weird. Then it was, it's a place you buy everything. And even though the retail side is nowhere near as big as the cloud computing side now, the brand basically became Jeff Bezos. He was sort of the face, in as synonymous with it as the way Steve Jobs was at Apple, Zuckerberg is at Facebook. And so it was a weird journey there. Like, he's originally from Albuquerque, New Mexico, was on his way to being a normal level rich person in assorted finance roles, decided, no, the internet, this is the cool thing, I'm going to make money off that. Most people thought he was crazy. A lot of people, in fairness, who had the same ideas as Bezos in terms of the internet could make us a lot of money, turned out to be terribly wrong. He wasn't. And yeah, he's built it into an empire. And like the real money, like I mentioned, it's coming now from the cloud side of the business, AWS as it's known, which is a huge revenue generator. It's comfortably the profit engine of Amazon now. And so even though Amazon's best known for that retail side, and Bezos is best known as the Amazon guy, therefore will be associated more with the retail side, you know, it's really sort of the less seen parts of the business that have actually made him the extraordinarily wealthy man he is.
The sort of the time that I remember everybody knowing who he was when there was the controversy surrounding his marriage, and people were talking about, you know, the divorce. If they get divorced, it will be like a ridiculous amount of money on the table and so on. Do we think that he's stepping away because he doesn't like the attention on him personally? And I think maybe he got a bit of a bad taste in his mouth after that whole thing.
I don't think that's entirely it, to be honest. He definitely didn't enjoy it, that's for sure. But he liked certain elements of the attention. Like, he got a bit part, like a cameo walk-on role in a Star Trek movie. So he certainly liked some level of attention, some level of personality. But he had his first taste of a U.S. congressional hearing last year. And, you know, he struggled pretty badly at that. And clearly, you know, he realized that might necessarily be what he likes. He wants to be seen as, you know, this great mind, this great entrepreneur. And like a lot of guys who, and it is almost always men, unfortunately, who do that, they see philanthropy as the logical next step, as to being, this is where I can make my legacy. So I'm not just the person who made a lot of money. I'm the person who helped the world. His big interests are space and climate change. Obviously, Bill Gates sort of set a precedent with that in terms of the roadmap, but Gates best being known for addressing cancer issues and poverty matters. So that, I think, is what, you know, Bezos wants to be known as, that he's more than just a guy who made a lot of money. And he's 57, so he's not old, but he's not young either. So he's thinking, well, this is the right time, timeline-wise, to get going on it, because I've got a whole lot of money. Let's start spending it for something useful.
I'm interested in that, right? So he has these other interests like the space and the environment and all the rest, but you can't avoid the worker conditions, the worker pay, and some of those ethics issues that you mentioned at the top of the piece when it comes to Amazon. Would it not be a better legacy for him to transform that?
Yes, but this is sort of where we get to the duality of humanity, in that he thinks everything he's doing is right, and so, but he also hates the criticism of it, and he doesn't understand how he can escape it the direct way. So, like Amazon, obviously, there's massive issues with worker treatment. I think that's pretty reasonably well documented at this stage, and Bezos as well. There's also privacy issues as well, and people talk about Alexa, the way that works, and he's obviously been very defensive of that, pointing out that it's helpful first, and. Yeah, it's a challenge, and I think his attitude with this move is that if he's ever going to not be associated with the bad side of Amazon and only the good side, and this is again his attitude, I don't think it's actually what's going to work, is that he needs to be known for stuff beyond that. But even with that, he's made flaws. Like when he mentioned he was going to invest so much in space, he goes, "I don't know what else to spend my money on." And of course, most people said, "What about paying your staff?" So he is definitely not the smartest when it comes to working out how to get the love he so clearly craves and the adoration he wants. But yeah, it's like a lot of these particularly awfully rich people. They're very good at certain things, but when it comes to other matters, they have massive blind spots.
Yeah, but you think you'd have enough leading advisors around him to kind of give him a nudge and give him a steer and say, this is a good idea, this is not a bad this is not a good idea. What do we think he's going to do next? Because he's still going to be associated with the company, he's just not going to be the head honcho anymore.
Yeah, he's going to be executive chair. So it's a role not dissimilar to what Gates basically moved into from Microsoft. I see a lot of Gates similarities in terms of the roadmap he's laying out for himself and looking at what he wants to do. Obviously, space is an issue, but his big investment last year was into a climate change program. He's dedicated $10 billion to that, which of course is dropping the ocean for him, hilariously, in terms of money. And he's, going to look at that a lot. The space thing is definitely going to be an issue. There's been a good bit of natter that he's going to get more involved as well with the Washington Post, which he owns. Which obviously, is always one of those ones where, well, this could go many ways, because on the one hand, he might make, help ensure it's safe and all that. The other people kind of going, is it great when, billionaires basically have a massive worldwide respected news source as, a tool for them. So he's going to have to be very careful with how he does that to make sure it gets him the result he wants, which is people liking him, which oddly should mean as offhanded an approach as possible, as sort of stepping away more than going hands-on, which I know isn't his style. He's a very hands-on approach type guy. So that's going to be interesting to see how he manages that. And generally speaking, for one thing, I really don't see him going near politics, by the way. That's one thing which always comes up when people like him retire, is politics. I don't see that at all in his future. His taste of dealing with politicians has definitely soured him on the idea of it, if he hadn't already been sour before. And he might well try and influence public policy for sure, but we won't see a Bezos 2028 campaign anytime soon.
Thank goodness for that. What do we know about the guy taking over from him?
Andy Jassy is a very interesting choice, and interesting doesn't necessarily mean good. He's the logical call, is how I put it, because Jassy's been the main brain and main driver of AWS, that profit engine for Amazon. So he's coming from the most successful part of the business to run the overall company. And he's also seen as Bezos's right hand. So these are all great marks in his favor. The one natural bit of caution there is that so is Steve Ballmer. Steve Ballmer did not have a great tenure running Microsoft, and he would have been unquestionably the logical choice at the time when he was selected. And that is the thing, when you're moving from founder CEO to the first not founder CEO, it is a difference, especially with an enormous company, because someone like Gates, someone like Bezos, someone like Zuckerberg, even though they're dealing with this huge machine with all these moving parts, at the end of the day, it's still seen as their company, irrespective of how much actual share stock they hold. And so as a result, they can be seen as being, the deity role in terms of if they say it, it happens. It's much harder to be the chief executive who isn't that person. And that's going to be the challenge for Jassy, because he's going to have to learn to adapt with the questions that come up over the next decade. Like Microsoft's mistake with Ballmer wasn't that Ballmer wasn't a good person for Microsoft. He's as dyed in the wool as it gets for them. The problem was he made mistakes in terms of reading what the trends were going to be, what Microsoft would need to adapt to. And that's going to be the same question for Jassy going forward. But even those who succeeded, like Tim Cook, his first couple of years at Apple were very tough, purely because he wasn't Steve Jobs. Nothing he could do about that. He's now a pretty revered CEO in terms of his business acumen and business success. So that, I suppose, is the model I'd be looking at if I was Jassy, except that the first couple of years, people are going to basically say, well, you're not Jeff Bezos. And, try to make sure that, yeah, but I am Andy Jassy, and that should be enough, like, for him going forward, I think.
The point about, you're not the founder CEO and that sort of transition period is super interesting because, as you said, everyone will be watching every move and doing the comparison. Do we expect anything, any of those sort of ethical worker rights questions to be addressed, or will it be just let's steady the ship for the first few years and then we can do whatever we want in the long run?
I think it's going to be a very boring first couple of years, to be frank about it. So anyone hoping for major change when it comes to worker rights and everything else we've discussed, don't, is the short version. And that's unfortunate, because I would say much prefer they were treating their staff well, you know, definitely better than they currently are. But I think the problem for Jassy going forward is going to be that he's going to be the person answering these questions, not Bezos. And so it's, you know, we've seen it with like Sundar Pichai, we've seen it with Sachin Nadella. They've learned to adapt and how to address these sort of congressional committees and the likes. But it's very tough to address it, because Jassy's going to be answerable to a lot more people than Bezos ever was. Bezos was theoretically answerable to shareholders, but really he was answerable to himself. Jassy is very, very answerable to shareholders. So he's got to keep all their interests in mind while trying to sort of navigate a path that is best for Amazon.
Let's talk briefly just about Bebo. Bebo is coming back. That's good news, bad news. Does anyone care?
I think people care purely because of the what will it mean question. Like, you know, started, what will Bebo be? Because will it be the Bebo we knew? If so, it's a failure from day one, to be frank about it. You know, I don't see a mid-2000s idea of how a social network works having a hope right now. But the brand is obviously well-known, not necessarily strong, but it is certainly a well-known brand. So it will help in that respect. But what they can do with it, it's got to be creative. I mean, I don't know if it will be, but if it's going to have any hope of success, it's got to be something that's fairly innovative and not likely to be copied straight away. Because we've seen that, you know, everybody's got a stories right now, and that began with basically that grew out of what Snapchat's basic model was. So, I mean, we don't know what it's going to mean, what it's going to look like. So it certainly got the little pop on the internet the other day, where people are kind of going, oh, wow, Bebo, remember that? And all the jokes about, you know, your top eight and all that and other halves. And yeah, and you used to have like your little one box where you could put one video, all these beautiful little small things that are, you know, relics of the internet past. But what it could mean, I mean, unless I'm talking to the people designing it, I haven't got a real answer for you, to be honest, Jess.
Yeah, no, because when I saw it, there was the nostalgia thing straight away of like, oh, God, do you remember the crack that we had and the rows over who was in your top 8 or your top 16 or whatever? And then the more I thought about it, like if it's aimed at people like our age that would have used it first time around, like it was the biggest thing when I was in secondary school. But I am now in my 30s. I'm actually like sort of reducing the amount of time I spend on social media. I don't know that I necessarily want another platform. And so if their only sort of, I don't know, point of difference is that they're not a Facebook company, like who cares really? Because it's only good if all of your friends move over, and if they don't go down the Facebook route, which maybe they'll have to be a viable business.
Yeah, and also nostalgia is not a sustainable business model.
No.
Because as you mentioned, you're in your 30s. I'm just about still in my 30s, hanging on for dear life for the next 2 months. And we are at the older end of where you want to target people to grow fast. And frankly, we're too old in that respect. You need to be getting people who are, you know, teenagers and early 20s. And that's where you grow fast. And that's where you find ways to generate revenue and generate ad revenue. And those people didn't grow up with Bebo. They just flat out didn't. It's that long ago. So you've got to find a way to make them want to use this, even though for a lot of them, and this to me is a big issue for the brand, is their parents will be telling them, oh, I used to go on Bebo, which if I'm a teenager, it's like, okay, thanks, Dad.
Yeah. Nobody needs to know that. No, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Also, very briefly, in keeping with what you were mentioning in the Amazon conversation, big tech is going to continue to come under massive pressure, particularly in the US, as Biden continues to make strides as the new president of the United States. He has said multiple times that he wants to address the issues relating to big tech and social media. Do we have any indication as to the timeline or what might happen there?
I'm actually sighing here because it's like, I don't know, but I know there's going to be something and it's going to be reasonably soon. Timeline wise, the next month, I don't expect to see anything, to be frank about it. I think we're going to be hitting the back end of the first quarter of Biden's presidency before we see him start really going into that the talk always is the first 100 days of president, but an awful lot of that first 100 days, you've got the more core domestic issues in the first month of it, really. Then you've got, you know, a lot of foreign policy stuff is being dealt with, you know, in the next month. And it's only really the sort of heavy industry business related stuff. We only really start to see that as we get to the sort of tail end of the first 100 days. So we could be talking like sort of, you know, late March before we really should see what the movement is. I suppose the big thing is that it's looking increasingly likely that Biden's raise of the minimum wage is going to come in. So that'll be the first thing a lot of big tech notices, but well, those who've got more, you know, low quality manufacturing roles. So that'd be the first place I'd look at. But beyond that, it's very hard to say when and what. Certainly it's going to be a harsher administration than the Trump one was on big tech, even though the Trump one presented itself as such. Because frankly, with the Democrats holding both houses, well, de facto holding the Senate, they can get a lot more done. And that's not just because they're Democrats, by the way. That's just because they're one party holding both houses, so they can get more of what they want done, as well as the presidency. So that gives Biden a lot more room to work with and put real pressure on them.
Finally, the Super Bowl is taking place on Sunday night. I know you're a big NFL, yeah, a little woo there, a big NFL fan. Where can people watch the Super Bowl legally online, or is there such a place?
Yeah, well, it's on Sky Sports for sure, and it's usually on at least one of the British channels. So there's also NFL Game Pass online as well, Sky Sports, like I said, and yeah, it should turn out to be quite a game. They're two very exciting teams to watch. Obviously, Tom Brady's a very interesting character, and I've written about him in Sunday's Business Post, so read it there. Sorry, in Sunday's edition of the Business Post, so read it there. And yeah, it should be really, really good, and I'm looking forward to it and staying up for it. I have actually booked Monday off, which if you haven't already and you're planning on staying up for the game, I'd advise that. If you can't, well, endure is all I can say.
I'll be one of those ones being forced to endure it. Emmett Ryan, it's always a pleasure to chat to you. Thank you so much for your time here on News Talk.
Cheers. Thanks, Jess.
Coming up next, we'll get the very latest on the e-scooter legislation.
Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. We're going to talk about e-scooters once again because there was further movement this week in terms of the legislation, which is very exciting for people like me who own an e-scooter but are terrified to use one because we don't want to break the law. Derek Riley of the EV Review Ireland YouTube channel is with me now. Derek, welcome back to the show. What is the very latest?
Yes, thanks, Jess. This week we got a notification that on the 1st of February, first of the month, we have the government releasing the looking at the next steps for e-scooter and e-bikes legislation. So what does that mean? It is part of the Department of Transport Road Traffic Miscellaneous Provisions Act. If we're going to get very technical,
snappy
though, Jess.
Title, yeah.
Snappy title. The marketing team are working flat out on it. So what is it covering? E-scooters, e-bikes, and then other bits and pieces, but I know we're focusing on e-scooters today, but in a future time, Jess, we'll also be looking at the ability for the government to allow people to test autonomous vehicles.
That's exciting.
There's going to be no segue, but we're talking about e-scooters today. So it literally is the government have said this is coming up very, very close, and this is what we're planning on doing.
Okay, this is good news. This is progress. This is what we've been waiting for. We spoke before, and you can find the podcast up on newstalk.com, about the difference between the different types of mobility devices, shall we call them. Mm-hmm. So in terms of the scooters that you see around the place at the moment, that's what we're talking about here. The likes of, is it the Xiaomi scooter that's available?
Yes.
And there's a few others like that. So it's those type of scooters that we're talking about now.
Yeah, lots of brands have done it or are partnered, and you'll have come across thousands of different variations. So what the government are doing is they were all classified as a motor propelled vehicle, which encompassed everything from a bus and a truck all the way down, unfortunately, to these as well. So that's where the grey area came into it, where they were not legal.
Okay.
We had some court cases where people were fined, points on their license. So a lot of people, even some of my family members, had bought and then actually said, you know what, it's not worth the hassle. And they sold it and they got something else. So the government are now saying that we're going to classify these smaller micro mobility pieces, like we covered the last time, as PPTs, powered personal transporters. So this is electric kick scooters, electric skateboards, one wheels, uni wheels, electric e-bikes. So all that kind of stuff is going to be in this new legislation. So people will understand, okay, if I buy this, this is what I can and cannot do. And so they're going to start putting that into place.
Okay, and so do we have any detail as to what the can and can't do things are?
Definitely, we know that there isn't going to be tax insurance or a driving license required. We will be looking at, the government are looking at now, what about the finer details of it? Are they going to be allowed on footpaths? Are they going to be allowed in bicycle lanes? We haven't got the detail on that specifically, but we even have some scooter sharing companies coming in from the likes of the Netherlands, advising the government as to, okay, we've run these schemes. And so it's not just about personal use, it's about scooter and e-bike sharing platforms as well. And there is a plethora of them, Jess.
Yeah, they're huge. When I was in Seattle, I was going to say last year, but 2019, I was in Seattle three times in 2019, and they are everywhere, to the point where I was taking a photograph and I sort of moved backwards to take the photograph and knocked three of them over. Like, they are everywhere. And they have, like, I'm intrigued by it because you obviously there are security concerns, because they're not like the bikes that you kind of like hook up and, or in Seattle anyway, you don't put them into like a bike lock like the Dublin bikes. You kind of just leave them anywhere. Is that the sort of thing that these companies are talking about?
Yeah, and that potentially will be part of the legislation. Will there be docking stations like you have at Dublin Bikes, or will there be a position where you can just not abandon, park sensibly these bikes anywhere? And then on the app, you can see, well, okay, where's my nearest one? Somebody's just after dropping one off 50 meters down the road and I can go and pick it up. So yeah, there's a lot of different elements to this. There's the shops that are selling them. So I talked to my local scooter shop here in Dunleary, Dublin Love Bikes, and I was asking them, what does this legislation mean? And everybody's for it. Everybody knows, and we can see that people have bought them regardless of whether they were legal or not. But it's interesting, what they're saying is it wasn't cyclists that were buying it. It was people that didn't want to go on public transport. It was people that have less than 10 kilometers commute. And then it was potentially older people as well that wanted a way of getting around a bit easier, which I think is great.
Yeah, no, I'm all for them. I was one of the people who bought. I bought the Xiaomi, I think it was the Xiaomi M365 or something like that is what I bought. And then I got too scared to use it because the sort of lack of clarity in terms of where you can use it and all of that jazz. So I'd be interested to see how this develops. The one thing I would like to see in the legislation, I don't know if this will make me super unpopular, but I would love to see an age restriction on them, because there have been, over the last 2 weeks, the only place I've been going is here to the office and to my local supermarket. And walking to my supermarket over the last few weeks, a number of youths, like teenagers, people younger than me, so youths, flying around on them. And they don't seem to have the cop on. And this is not an attack. It's just like they don't seem to realize that if they were going the 28 miles per hour on the path beside me and they change direction, or if they lose control, they could do some proper damage. So I would be for putting an age restriction on them, I have to say.
Jess, I hope you're not running for election anytime soon, but you're 100%
down
right
with this sort of thing. Down with
two responses to that. The company I was talking about that from the Netherlands, were it's a company called Dot, D-O-T-T, and they're in numerous cities around Europe, and they went to the government and very much like that, saying it shouldn't be anybody under 16, anybody 16 to 18 mandatory to wear a helmet, and all of this shouldn't be driving on the footpath. And so they were saying to the government, this is what we've found and this is what we've come up with, this is what we'd recommend. And so we're hoping that the government will take a sensible approach. I like that of talking to Joe and in the local shop. But then I was talking to the huge operators, the likes of Free Now and Bleeper, here in Dublin and around the country. And Bleeper changed their name from Bleeper Bikes to Bleeper because they knew this is coming down the line. And so they're all for it. And what that will be is will be a mobility as a service, exact same as Free Now. So you can go on the Bleeper app or the Free Now app and you can go, well, I can hire a taxi or I can rent a scooter.
Yeah.
And so when you start to see this kind of integration of transportation methods, this is what we want.
It is what we want. And I think, you know, I was talking to someone recently who lives in the Dunleary area, and they were saying that a lot of the roads around there now are being made one-way systems, and they have huge cycle lanes and huge spaces for mobility vehicles and indeed just traditional bikes. And I think it's great if we get the infrastructure right. What I'm nervous about is they get the green light for these e-scooters and don't kind of have firm criteria of where they can be, who can use them, how they can use them. Because what will end up happening is basically piss people off. People will get annoyed by it and then take out that rage and sort of tar everyone with the one brush who goes on one of these e-scooters. So I do think, and I know again, I'm definitely not cool anymore, but I do think we need proper rules to go alongside the legislation and the regulation.
Yeah, you're going to have the private driver, rider, whatever you want to call them. So making sure that they've got the correct PPE, enough lights, they've got their vis vest on them, whether they have to have a helmet on or not. And then you're going to have the likes of local authorities. And I was just reading about Fingal County Council, and they put out an RFI, a request for information form, from these companies that are providing sharing services, wondering what's the best practice. So these local authorities, and I'm sure the government are the same, they're all researching, okay, if a certain county council has to allot 4 licenses across the county, how are we going to do this? And there's a lot of big Irish players in the place. So you've got the likes of Zip Mobility, based out of Dublin. They're after partnering with a company, a startup, a consortium called Luna. And so Zip do the rental of the scooters, and then Luna are the company that put the trackers into it. So Jess takes out her membership and the scooter is tracked, but the scooter will say Jess did or didn't park the scooter where it was supposed to be parked. Jess was going too fast. Jess was driving up on the footpath. So Jess may not be allowed potentially use that scooter again. Or so they're going to start ranking their riders, which I think is a really good idea. You've got Smart Scooters. You've got Voi out of the Nordics, which potentially may be working with Free now. You've got Bleeper, as I mentioned, who have changed their name. They did a funding round there recently and raised 600,000 due to this potential expansion. You've got Lime, which you probably would have seen in the US. I know I saw it in Austin in Texas when I was there a couple of years ago. And then you've got a company out of Carlow called Zeus, and they're after raising 2 million euros for a European expansion. Now, I think it's great, but also I've seen cities, and you've seen them as well, Jess, where we don't want scooters abandoned, thrown in canals, et cetera, all over the place. So the government they're one of the last major European countries to do this, to legislate. We just need to make sure that they're sensible about it. They look at all the best practices around the world. And the fact that we've got such great homegrown talent, the likes of Zeus, the likes of Zip, and likes of Smart Scooters that are ready to go, let's all work together and for once. Let's do it right, Jess.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think this is the kind of thing that if it's rushed or if we make hames of it, as I said, I just think it'll sour everybody's attitudes towards the e-scooters and the possibility of them as well. You know, I know myself, I on the days that I'm coming into work, and again, journalists are essential workers, so we're allowed to travel in. I'm on the Lewis, and at the moment the Lewis is very, very quiet, which is fantastic. But I would love to have the option to use the e-scooter instead or use it for part of the journey so I'm not on the tram for as long and so on. So there is massive potential for them. I just hope that we get it right. Do we have a timeline in terms of next stages and when they'll be greenlit in general?
Spring. So let's just take that vagality of before the end of spring is what we're hearing just now. This was all supposed to be done before the end of last year. So a lot of the micromobility forums and groups that are there were a bit disappointed that the government didn't bring in what the recommendations that they had, because they had put a working group in place. But listen, there was a big thing that's happened last year and it's still ongoing. Mm. So that's kind of putting everything out of kilter. But the fact that it's recommended that you only go on public transport if you are an essential worker and you need to travel essentially, like you're saying, as a journalist or somebody that works in whatever sector, public transport should only be that. And we can see that the Gardaí are increasing the number of checkpoints around the place and fines being imposed. So if the government are saying, if you have to travel somewhere, really you shouldn't be using public transport and it should only be for an essential travel. But a lot of people are making that decision that an e-scooter, I'm taking my personal space and I'm just going to go in the area that I need to go, and I can take that e-scooter with me. So it's going to be great to see it rolled out, like we said, rolled out right. And there's so many choices for the different types of scooters that are out there.
Yeah, I think next time you're on, we might go through some of the different models, the price points and what to look out for. If you are considering buying one, email techtalk@newstalk.com, and hopefully Derek will come back again and have those recommendations for you. Derek, it's always a pleasure to chat to you here on Tech Talk. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Jess.
Coming up next, we'll hear from the Tyndall Institute Ireland.
Tech Talk. Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
Welcome back to the final part of this week's Tech Talk. Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Tech Talk at newstalk.com is the email address if you want to get in touch, or you'll find me on Twitter at JessKellyNT. Just a flag, on Tuesday of next week, so this coming Tuesday, I'm going to be on the Pat Kenny Show at around 11:40 talking about the Emporia Smart 4. I tweeted a picture of this phone the other day when it arrived to my home for review, and a lot of people expressed a lot of interest. This is a smartphone that is aimed at older people, and it's not a particular age demographic. It's just for the older person who wants a smartphone that doesn't have all the bells and whistles. It's not too busy. That is very easy to use. Again, it's called the Emporia Smart 4, and it's available from OnPlus Mobile. I've been using it, testing it out, and I'll have the full review on Pat Kenny's programme Tuesday morning here on News Talk at around 11:40. But we are going to press on with this week's show. Tyndall National Institute is going to open its first research facility outside of Cork here in Dublin. This lab will create 50 new jobs by 2025, and it's going to be a test bed for IoT technology, for Wi-Fi 6G testing, artificial intelligence, and so much more. I am delighted to be joined now by Holger Klausmann, who is fronting this new innovation hub. Holger, you're very welcome to Tech Talk. Just before we jump into this new project, tell us a little bit about the Tyndall National Institute.
Okay, the Tyndall National Institute basically develops technologies for the future, leading the way in information and communication technology research in Ireland. And it's Ireland's largest dedicated research institute and one of Europe's leading institutes for deep tech research and innovation.
And where are you based?
I'm currently based remotely during the lockdown, and then for an interim period while we set up the permanent location for the lab in Dublin, will be based in Connect, the SFI Research Center for Future Networks and Communications hosted by Trinity College Dublin. And that also is a great opportunity for collaborations between Trinity, Tyndall and UCC.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about this. So this is the, as you mentioned there, the new wireless communications lab. Talk to us about the importance of this and the work that will be done.
Yes. Wireless connectivity really has never been more important than now, and everybody can see that during the lockdown with the need for faster Wi-Fi and wireless connectivity, particularly where people are really reliant on these network technologies to be able to work from home. And the new lab, which I'm heading up, will focus on future wireless communication technologies and will create multiple new research groups in the area of novel radio components, such as antennas and filters, future radio access networks like Wi-Fi and 6G, low-latency communication protocols, artificial intelligence, and quantum computing. And the aim is to grow the team to about 50 people by 2025.
Yeah, it's very exciting. And I'm sure people heard things like quantum computing and 6G. We're just about getting to grips with 5G here in Ireland. But the growth and the evolution of this technology, it's going to keep going. There's no end point. Sure, there's not.
Yeah, that's right. And at the moment, we are really at the change in evolution of wireless communications, and it's really changing significantly. So if we look at the past, the requirements were mainly driven by human demand. We've seen a 100-fold increase in wireless capacity growth over the past 10 years alone, and that's driven by internet access and video streaming. But in the future, this will change quite significantly, and the demand for wireless networks will be driven by mainly by machines and also other real-time applications. So reliable low-latency communications, for example, will be much more than important than capacity in the past, and that, as a result, changes the way networks have to be designed and then deployed and operated.
A lot of this stuff to the average person may seem, you know, over our heads because it is very much forward thinking, and the average person won't necessarily know the technologies that they're utilizing, but they will get the benefits from it. Give us some examples of where we're already seeing the benefits of this type of technology and the future impact that it will have.
Yes. So basically, we will develop technology that will make your phone and internet faster and will help to communicate with machines and also between machines better. And that really will change many aspects of our lives. So it will allow networks to bridge between the emerging digital, physical, and biological worlds. It will enable instant access to all information and near infinite computing power for both humans and machines, and will also significantly augment human capability through new services. And just a couple of examples. For example, it enables future factories where machines and robots collaborate very efficiently to solve complex problems, or it allows us to create digital models of the physical world, or we can call it digital twins. And this way we can predict the future. For example, if we look at an aircraft engine, we could create a digital model of that engine and synchronize this with wireless networks. And then we can run tests on the virtual model. And if something goes wrong, we can kind of predict what might happen to the real engine as well. And this gives us more time and makes everything much more safe.
So as you mentioned, the new lab is going to be opened up in Trinity. You mentioned the word collaboration there when you were giving the examples. How important will the collaboration be with Tyndall Institute as you develop these new initiatives?
The collaborations will be really very important. And we will be working very closely both with industry, different companies in the different areas that are interested in solving these problems, but also with academia such as University College Cork, Trinity and Tyndall to solve these big industrial challenges.
And you mentioned there that you will have a team of people working with you. Obviously, it's all unclear at the moment because of the lockdown, but what is the short, medium and long-term goals of the facility?
Well, the objective is basically to develop these fundamental new technologies and communications in the different areas. So the initial challenge is to build up the teams to a level where we can significantly contribute in the different areas. And we're looking at different funding sources in Ireland, in Europe, and also in collaboration with industries to achieve that.
Brilliant stuff. Well, it's an exciting new investment that's happening here in Dublin by the Tyndall National Institute. Holger, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks a lot for having me.
And that is all we have time for this week. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back in full up on newstalk.com. But don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on the Newstalk app in iTunes, Pocket Casts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. John Fardy's up next here on Newstalk. I'll chat to you next week.